Mini episode 157 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.info.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode number 157. This is FDH managing partner Rick Morris coming at you today with another very special segment. And we know this is one that you're very much going to enjoy, as we do. It's a pleasure on the show where nothing is off topic to be able to hit all kinds of different areas. It is always fun for us whenever we get a chance to talk to actors, and that has been a particular thrill for us. So we've talked to some very talented ones, and we've got another one coming up for you here today. But previously, when talking to folks like Dominic Chianese, Curtis Armstrong, Matthew Modine, a gentleman that we've been privileged to be able to become friends with through the course of the show, Peter Scolari, who I understand is also a friend of today's guest. It's been great to be able to learn about the creative process, what goes into it. For a conversational show such as ours, that's a particular treat. And again, not all actors have versatility. There are some that tend to play certain roles, and that's fine. And I can say that I personally am a great fan of the late, great John Candy. But again, I wouldn't go out on a limb and say that a lot of his movies were very much different. But that was part of the charm of it for me, was seeing the same thing over and over again. But it's great to be able to see versatility in actors. And for the gentleman that we're going to be talking to today, all I need to tell you about is this, that when you want to look at folks that are of a certain generation, they were both of that 1960s generation, but very, very much different. I don't know that anybody would much associate in the public mind both Vince Lombardi and Jimmy Hoffa. And the gentleman that we're speaking to today actually portrayed both of them, did so quite well. Both of those were stage roles. The Lombardi one quite famously on Broadway in the course of the last 2 years. His biggest role that he'd had previously was, of course, as Jack Arnold on The Wonder Years. And we're speaking to him today as he has come back to the small screen and part of the very, very successful thus far new TBS sitcom Sullivan and Son. So it's very, very timely to be able to speak with him. We've been efforting to make this happen for some time, and great to be able to do so now as the show is in the glow of having debuted very successfully on TBS. Great to be able to have on Dan Loria with us today. Dan, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Thank you, sir. It's a pleasure to be able to have you on, and looking forward to tracing through different things with your career leading up to this most recent sitcom that you're on here. But as far as the early days of your acting career and as it was coming together, I got a note from our senior producer, Steve Cervillo, who was kind enough to set this up for us today. He clarified, I guess, that your role on, as I believe it was Gus Thompson on One Life to Live, an early thing for you, that was as a pimp, he said. Is that correct?
I was a killer pimp on One Life to Live, and that's where I first met Judith Light, who played Marie Lombardi. I was the one who recommended her, and after her audition, they didn't even want to see anyone else. She was so perfect for it. So as you know, it all comes around. Good actors remember great people.
That's right. I'd forgotten that Judith Light was on that show also. Okay, yeah, that does all tie together. So that being, I believe, if my research was correct here, around 1984 or so. So that puts it not too far on the timeline before The Wonder Years. So that was something actually that popped for you relatively early in your career then.
Well, yeah, I was just a stage actor in New York, you know, and I actually was supposed to work for 4 days on One Life to Live, and I ended up being there for over a year with Judith, and I was off for 10 months and then back for another year. So I got a 2-year bad guy. It was fun.
That's pretty good. Yeah, I've I'm not going to lie. I saw a little bit of that show back in the day because my mom used to have it on a lot. And, an interesting show to be on and, again, to be interacting with the likes of Judith Light and everyone else like that. Very interesting how these things come
Bobby
back
Woods, down
the road. Oh, yeah,
Bobby Woods, Phil Carey, you know, there were so many good actors on that show. Erica Slezak, Robin Strasser, really, Al Freeman was on when I was on. So there were a lot of stage actors on there at the time.
Yeah, real top-notch cast. Yeah, and as you indicated, some of those that really went on to be fixtures through the life of the show, all the way up to when it went off the air on ABC there. But as far as your role with the Wonder Years, this is something that it's sort of a perennial question that we have on the show. We just posed it the other day to Journey bassist Ross Valerie when he was on with us. The concept that the public has of mailbox money and of residuals, I think the average person out there would think that the Wonder Years is probably just to whatever extent, the gift that just keeps on giving. But I found in posing the question a lot of times that the public's kind of misinformed on that. Is there a sense that now with in the DVD era, as new generations are discovering it, does it continue to be a revenue source to those who are a part of it?
And it's not what people think. But and in the Wonder Years, there is no DVD, and there never will be because they screwed up the rights to the music. So you can get it on Netflix now, but there was no we never got a check for DVD because there never was a DVD. So
wow.
And now they show most reruns on cable, and the money on cable is a lot less than what it was on primetime network. So it's all changed. You know, since I've been in the business, it's changed radically because of cable, because of DVDs, because of you know, people TiVoing things and recording things later. It's a whole new world out there. I'm glad I'm old. I'm glad I'm not starting now because I don't know what to tell young people. You know, they don't do plays anymore. They make, you know, 15-minute movies. I haven't seen an actor listen in the last 10 years. So it's all who's ever talking is close-up, you know. So there's very little into play on film anymore.
It is tough, Dan. We've got an up and coming actor in our crew, a gentleman named Will McMahon, and you know he's doing a great job and making it happen. But yeah, just from watching you know, the process, it's a grueling one today, as I'm sure it was when you were coming up. But yeah, you're pretty much making unanimous there. Pretty much everybody we talk to, whether it be in TV, music, whatever, says that yeah, the public kind of has a distorted view of whatever they think mailbox money is and residuals and the gift that keeps on giving. So apparently the public is you know, misinformed in a lot of the different areas there. But again, that role, you know, just providing you tremendous visibility, it's always a point of fascination on our show when we're looking at certain characters and how they come to be associated with actors. We've had this discussion on the show in the context of the Seinfeld actors, and more recently with Bryan Cranston with Breaking Bad versus what he did with Malcolm in the Middle. The character that you're portraying on this new sitcom, Sullivan and Son, it seems at first glance to be more laid back than Jack Arnold was. Seems to be
much more.
So I mean, what are some of the things as you're looking at it here? Some similarities and differences between these two very distinct characters that you've breathed life into.
Well, the similarity is he's a good family provider and his family comes first. But the difference is Jack Sullivan just enjoys life and enjoys what he's doing. And my character is allowed to laugh at everything. Half the time the crew are looking at me going, did you crack up or is that the character? And I'll always say, for me to know, you to figure out, you know. So whereas Jack Arnold didn't have too many laughs in him. You know, he was kind of beat down by work and trying to support his family. So it's a big difference. There I was in charge, and now Jodie Long, who plays my wife, whenever she stamps her foot, I jump, you know. So it's just the opposite.
That's true. Yeah, the family dynamic definitely plays in. And I wonder to what extent also, as far as it being situational, environmental, as far as the Jack Arnold thing, that was really somewhat, well, I guess it was a period piece set during the Vietnam era. he had the sort of generation gap with his sons there to where they didn't necessarily understand the other's experiences, versus on this sitcom, you know, your character and the son don't really seem to have too many of those type of failures to understand one another between them.
Oh, no, no. And Steve Byrne in real life is as nice, if not nicer, than the character he's playing. He's such a generous person. And, you know, you don't find too many leads on TV shows who are like Steve. You know, he realizes he's the maypole that everybody spins around. And he's, when he gets a funny line, he says, you know what? This line might be funnier if it came from one of the three guys. He's very generous. And you usually don't see that, especially on traditional type of sitcoms like Sullivan and Son is, you know, four-camera live audience. But he's very generous to the other stand-ups that are on the show. He's always giving away a funny line.
That's tremendous to have that kind of dynamic, and we had heard that about Steve, so it's interesting to have you confirm that. And it's such a great puzzle with the different pieces that are in it, too. Of course, for a lot of folks, when they're thinking a sitcom on TV set in a pub, a lot of them might go back to back in the day with Cheers, which, interestingly enough, was running parallel to when The Wonder Years was on. And lo and behold, you've got Rob Long associated with this show, one of the brains behind that one, who is some of the brains behind this show. So what has Rob brought to it from his perspective of having done a show in a similar setting previously?
Well, Rob, you know, Rob's one of those guys, again, he's been around so long that he it's no longer a matter of ego. It's a matter of let's do the best show we can. So he's constantly working on the script with the writers. We very seldom – we have a read-through on Wednesday mornings, and usually the theme stays the same. But during the course of the next 4 or 5 days rehearsal before we shoot, it just gets tighter and tighter and better, and the jokes get funnier. And that really comes from Rob. You know, he knows this. It's like bread. You just keep kneading it. You just keep working on it. He never says, oh, I wrote that joke, so it's got to be the best joke. He's always like, anybody got a good idea? Plus having Steve on, who's also one of the producers on the set, you know, if somebody ad-libs a joke, he jots it down right away and he calls Rob and says, Rob, we got a good one. And Rob's like, keep that, you know. So Rob really makes it a family thing, and I love working with him. He's such a pro.
Well, you know, it's easy.
The people have been around like me. The people have been around like me and Christine Eversole, Brian Doyle Murray, Jody. We know there's no one way to say a line or one joke. There's always an alternative. And if Rob is ever conflicted on which one's better, he'll just say, "Let's shoot them both, and we'll make up our minds in the editing room." And that's really the way the process should be.
What a great way of maximizing all the talents that are there, because, yeah, when you've got that kind of true collaborative process involved, you know, that can only help to be successful when you're taking advantage of the talents of everybody there in every way. And a name that we haven't mentioned yet, but is somebody also involved on the production side of this thing, a tremendous talent and somebody who I've heard say good things about you in interviews, Vince Vaughn, being a part of this thing, and again, as has been emphasized in every interview I've read, somebody who's not just lending a name to the process, but very much involved in it also. So when you've got a talent like him as a part of this thing, what are some of the distinct elements that he brings to it?
Vince Vaughn and Peter Billingsley. Peter was the young man in Christmas Story whose tongue gets frozen to the pie. They have their production company, and I literally got the job because Vince saw me in Lombardi. And they actually offered me a different part, the part that Brian Doyle Murray was playing. And, you know, I read it and I said, when the dad of the Wonder Years says these lines, they will not be funny. They're just going to come across as really hard and prejudicial. And I really don't think I'm right. And my agent, even though the money was good and it was an offer, said, agreed with me, which surprised me because they're, you know, usually let's get it for the money. And he said, all right, we're going to pass. And then Vince called and asked why, and my agent told him. And he said, well, I respect that. And then 2 days later, he called back and said, you want to be the father, Sullivan of Sullivan and Son, at twice the money. And my agent said, I said yes before I even called you. So it worked out, and, you know, Vince being an actor, I think, was going more by seeing what I did on stage and as a performer than, oh, is he the right type, or can he do this? He knew I could handle it, and it's actually been one of the easiest jobs I've ever had. I'm kind of the straight man in this, but it's been a lot of fun, and I'm really grateful for it, and I would do anything for Peter and Vince. They're just really good people. And they work hard. You know, people think, oh, he's the producer. He sits back and makes sure it gets sold. But they're there. They're at every shooting. They're contributing. They come up with some funny jokes. Let's shoot it again, but say this, and it'll be hysterical. You know, and Vince is always, you know, he's always looking, which helps me out a lot. He's always looking for that moment when we might be able to put in something touching as opposed to just a joke. You know, when I went to Vince when we did the pilot and said, at the end, instead of walking off, I'd like to put up a chair. Vince went, that would be great. And Steve, you say to him, I thought you were leaving. And then Dan, say something back. And I said, force a habit. He said, great. And that was all Vince. So he sees that we need those moments in there to keep the bond between father and son alive. It is called Sullivan and Son. I don't need a lot of lines, but I need the key line to the son.
Sure. Well, I mean, what a great window that is into the collaborative process and how something like this comes together. And I know it's very early in this thing, but I can't help but be reminded of a previous conversation on the program here when we were talking to Peter Scolari about this.
Oh, Peter.
To him about, yeah, you know, everything with Bosom Buddies and then Newhart and having Lightning strike twice. I know it's early, but are you getting a sense yet here that maybe Lightning striking again, maybe all this time after out of Wonder Years? I mean, you got some other great things going as well, but are you getting that sense of deja vu yet?
You know, Rick, I don't want to get into that because I have no idea if it's going to go or not.
Okay.
And nobody does. You know, people say, oh, the audience did seem to like it. We got good numbers. Be quite honest with you, I thought the best indication was our crew. These guys have been around for 20 years, some 30 years. They all feel we're going to come back. I said, your lips to heaven's ear. All I know is tomorrow morning when I wake up, I'm an actor. So I'm just going to pursue. If they let me know we're not coming back tomorrow, I guarantee you within a month I'm in a play somewhere. Might be in the middle of an alley in Toledo, but I'll be in a play. So, and right now, by not knowing what's coming next, next week I'm supposed to go to Chicago and do Dick Wolf's new show, do a guest spot on it. You know, I did 7 Law and Orders, so I just keep working as an actor. I'd rather do a play than anything else, which my agents hate because it's no money. But, you know, Charlie Durning and Jack Klugman are my mentors. So I've never gone a year without a play. I love when everybody says, oh, his Broadway debut in Lombardi. Lombardi was my 57th play. So I'm always doing a play.
You've racked up a tremendous track record there. Just going back to what you said, before that is tremendously impressive that's your attitude, that you're kind of taking it in stride, because, you know, the temptation might be for other people to think, hey, we got it made, this thing popped big, it's going to be a hit. That's great that you're staying within yourself at this point. By the way, too, and you mentioned another name there I'm very impressed with as well, Mr. Durning. I will tell you, on our blog, every year Memorial Day, we put up his video from, I think it was about 2005, the Washington Memorial. What a tremendous hero. He's somebody we very much look up to at FDH, sir.
Yeah, he's the most decorated World War II veteran still alive. So he's 89.
Yeah.
Yeah, he helped me from the second month I was in the city. And the first thing he said, don't ever leave the theater, because by the time you're through, the only acting is going to be done on the theater. And he's right. You know, most film now is to fill an editing machine. You have very little control over what comes out. But on stage, you know, you got to be able to carry the freight. So
it's definitely, it's where you're finding, you know, some of the purest art when it comes to acting, no question about that. And as far as your role there, again, you talked about all the work that had gone into it beforehand, but Lombardi out there being a hit as it was, during its run, it was very noteworthy because, again, I would see a lot of coverage about it. The NFL really seemed to be taking a lot of interest in it. Yeah, while it was going on, I'm just curious, what kind of feedback did you get from the football community on it, if any?
Oh, from the football community, we couldn't have been better. I mean, the NFL was terrific, and everybody wanted to talk about Coach Lombardi. Anybody who played for him or worked with him had stories. They always start with a funny story and then end up with tears in their eyes. I mean, the man had such an impact on them. And it was actually it was a hard role to play, but it was a very easy role to get into because I had so much help. I had all the footage from the NFL. Judith Light had a much harder job. There was very little footage of Marie Lombardi, so it was really a creation from the stories she heard. Me, I had the actual footage, and I could do his voice, and all the players wanted to talk to him. But like you said before, I played Hoffa 2 years before that, and believe me, nobody wanted to talk about anything. But with Coach Lombardi, everybody wanted to share their insights to him, and the NFL couldn't have been more gracious. They really embraced the show, and they embraced what we try to do. We were supposed to run 10 weeks. We ran 10 months, so... You know, and it was a killer on me physically, but in the matter of fact, in a pilot of Sullivan's, and I see how much I'm leaning over and limping still. But you know, it took a little while to straighten up again. But it was I had a lot of help. Loved talking to the old ball players, Horning and Taylor, and Big Dave Robinson, who came to the not only to the show, but he came to rehearsals and shared some stuff with us. It was just wonderful. So.
Well, as far as how that went, and I understand maybe not so much on a personal level because I'm told that you're a Giants fan, but on a business level, that must have been serendipity, right, to have it happen the year that the Packers won the Super Bowl? I mean, you've got revival of interest.
Right, and first of all, the Giants had Coach Lombardi first. He was 5 years as their offensive coordinator. Landry was the defensive coordinator when he was the offensive coordinator. So. And he was from New Jersey. But, yeah, I got a feeling the coach was pulling some strings up there. So everything worked out right for the show, you know.
In terms of you being a Giants fan, I just have to ask this because this is something we've talked about on the program previously. I was very hard on some folks who, when Jason Pierre-Paul was drafted, I understand there were a lot of people in the fan base who were like, who's this guy? What a crummy pick. Please tell me, Dan, you were not one of those people and you knew it all along that this
no,
guy was going to be
No, I was never, never one of those. I don't question. They know a lot more and they watch a lot more films. And I never understood when a New Yorker gets upset with Eli Manning. I thought he was the best pick we ever had. I would have taken him over Peyton Manning any time. And now he has two rings. Peyton only has one. He's a tremendous leader. He leads by example. He never had the receiving core that his brother had. So sometimes the Giant fans get too on people too quick. You know, it takes time to mature, especially a quarterback. So,
that's true.
Coach Coughlin, he did two talkbacks for us at Lombardi, and he was just what a motivator, what a great guy. And obviously a real football man, you know, and totally dedicated not only to the sport but to his team and his players. You know, each player knows what his job is when he becomes a Giant, you know. So I don't know. I got a lot of confidence in them. I got a feeling Eli is going to get another ring or two before he's finished.
I was going to say, you know, as far as this year goes, obviously there's been a real whammy on that. Nobody's been able to make it happen back-to-back, and part of it is because, you know, you go through that off season and you're hitting the banquet circuit and everybody's patting you on the back. But
well, you also lose
a couple of years ago.
Yeah, you lose a couple of players, too. I mean,
yeah, that's
lost,
true. That's true.
Manningham,
so how do you feel about this year? Do you feel pretty good?
I want to see how they develop doing, not that the score matters much, but in preseason. So, but I think they're going to be very strong. You know, everybody always talks about Dallas, and of course, that's what Philadelphia did at the last four games. But I got a feeling the Giants are solid. They're going to be right in there in the hunt, and whoever wins that division is going to go pretty far in the playoffs.
Absolutely, yeah. That thing's a meat grinder to be sure. Yeah. But as far as having played the Lombardi role, and as you said, coming somewhat on the heels of playing Jimmy Hoffa and everything that went into that, and with your love of the stage, I know you've said that regardless what happens with Sullivan and Son, that you've got your eye on some things. Are there any specific types of roles yet that you haven't played or you'd like to play more of that you possibly see?
Oh, well, all actors have characters they want to do. You know, I've always wanted to play Milton Hershey. I always thought he was a hero, an industrialist who we need to see today. He became a very, very wealthy man without screwing the workers. He provided health care with them and for them and housing and college education for his workers. And I don't know why we don't make movies about people like that. You know, our business is weird. We're like any other business. 15% of the people I work with are total jerks. And 85% of them are very dedicated, and they want to do their best work. They're true artists. But the difference with our business and any other business is we promote the 15%. You know, you'll hear about all the kids who are on TV shows who got drug problems and later on in life, you know, beat up somebody. But you don't hear anything about the 85% like on the Wonder Years, who are, all of them are doing great. Jason Hervey is one of the leading producers of reality shows. Fred Savage is literally one of the biggest three-camera and four-camera directors. We tried to get him on Sullivan Sunday. He was just too busy. I'm sure he'll do some down the line if we get picked up. Danica McKellar, Winnie Cooper, she's written her fourth math book. Josh Saviano is a big entertainment lawyer in New York. Matter of fact, he's the lawyer for Spider-Man. But Allie is still working. You never hear about that stuff. But if one of them wrecks a hotel room, oh, boy, they'll promote that. You know, why Danica McKellar isn't on a series is beyond me. I would spin that positive promotion the way they spin the negative one. But it's a different business.
True.
Louis B.
Absolutely.
Mayer, believe me, would have had her all over the tube saying, that's my discovery. Isn't she wonderful, you know?
Yeah, what an incredible cast that was, and again, you know, when you talk parallels, much like the cast that you're a part of right now, and
nicest people, Christine Ebersole is not only funny and talented, she's adopted three children, Brian Doyle Murray, he's been through a lot, and he's just a wonderful person to be with, and nobody is sweeter or more lovely than Jodie Long. And the four young comics we have working on the show, they are, I mean, you could have the worst day of your life. You could walk in there with tears in your eyes. You know, my dog died. You're going to get 20 minutes of dead dog jokes until you're laughing. You can't throw a line out there without these guys jumping. Yeah. And our two young girls, you know, Valerie and Vivian, so sweet. And, you know, I got them over watching old movies, and they're starting to realize the opportunity they have here. It's not the opportunity of being on the show. It's the opportunity of getting the recognition and getting a little money so you can go produce a play or something that you can further your career with.
Absolutely. Yeah, the freedom to chase what you really want to do. And, again, you make that workplace sound as tremendous to be a part of as it is to watch on TV. And, again, it's as we knew it would be.
I told Vince Vaughn, I said, forget the show. Film the rehearsal. We got a hit.
That should at least go on the season one DVD box, I'm thinking. That should be somewhere, you know. But as we knew it would be, Dan, a tremendous conversation. Now, we'd certainly love to chew over some more things with you when you have the time. We always love to give our guests a chance to plug anything. So any additional things, causes that you're involved with, anything we didn't hit, please take it away,
good,
sir.
Well, I'll let Steve know, and hopefully when we come back, we can review the second season.
Excellent. I'm very much looking forward to it, as I know our audience is. Thank you so much, Dan. This was a real treat to be able to do.
Thanks. Thanks for having me, Rick. Really appreciate it.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, All Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Timeout. Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.